Welcome to Inflection Point, interviews with women changing the status quo. I'm Lauren Schiller. This week on Inflection Point...
We're all going to die. How do we survive? You know, how do we reverse this trend?
It seems like running a business and respecting the environment are at odds. Is it possible to do good for the planet and have a successful business? Capitalism with a conscience. That's our Inflection Point. By now, we've all heard the concerns about overcrowding, over-medicating, and inhumane conditions for animals in factory farms. We've also heard about alternative meat options, organic, grass-fed, free-range. But when we buy that chicken breast or ribeye at the meat counter, we know very little about its history. Claire Ermengard wants you to know, so she started Mindful Meats. Claire, welcome to Inflection Point.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Just how much of the beef in this country comes from factory farms?
I would say that probably 90%, if not more. The last I looked at the USDA stats, and that's public record for anyone who wants to fact check me, is sourced and distributed by the four major beef companies in the United States. So when you think of a factory farm for beef, I always think of a confined animal feeding operation, what's also known as a CAFO. And the production is such that you have cow-calf operators who are ranchers who produce calves on range, and they're weaned from their mothers, and then they go and are feeders and yearlings, and then they are raised for about, you know, up to a year of age, and then they're moved into the factory farm setting, which is the feeding operation where they're fed out on an exclusive diet of grain and kept in confinement for anywhere from 3 to 6 months or until they hit market weight. So that's what you think about when you think about a factory farm for beef. And, you know, at least 90% comes from of the beef in the United States comes from a scenario like that.
And you mentioned that there are four companies that control that entire market.
Yes.
What are you doing at Mindful Meats that's different from what you just described?
Right. So for some perspective, in the United States, we harvest about 35 to 36 million cows or cattle or bovine annually. That's a lot of beef. The last I looked at averages consumption per person, it's, you know, over 200 pounds of beef per person per year. So that's a lot of beef that we're eating in the United States. And so when you think about percentages, that gives you some perspective. When you have so much concentration and consolidation in an industry, you really don't have very many options in the marketplace. And that's, you know, options on the consumer side for people to be able to go out and have a choice of a different product to buy, but also on the producer side for how they raise that animal and the system in which they sell that animal. So you might go out into a retail store and see lots of different brands, but on average, they're owned by the same big companies. So that's kind of where that consolidation comes in. So at Mindful Meats, our goal is to increase diversity for both consumers as well as producers. So we work directly with our livestock producers who raise animals according to our standards, and those standards are very different than what you find in a conventional feeding operation. And then bring those standards under certification to ensure to our customers that they're buying a product that's been raised according to our certifier standards. So we are fully pasture raised. All of our animals live on farm and are grazed on pastures their entire lives. And we're certified organic. So everything about the production, from how they're raised on farm and how they're treated or not treated, as well as how they're processed when they get to the harvest facility and co-packing facilities, is certified organic. In addition, we're the first non-GMO project verified beef company in the United States. And that's an added certificate that is basically taking what we view as the organic standard even further to increase testing for any additional feed that's fed to those animals outside of their pasture as supplemental feed to make sure it hasn't been contaminated with genetically engineered crops.
Okay, so that's a great point. When I go to the grocery store and I'm looking at trying to decide what my options are, I can see my options before I'm trying to decide what I'm going to buy, and I see the option of having grass-fed beef. You're saying that just because it's grass-fed doesn't necessarily mean that it's good grass.
That's correct. There is not very much regulation, if any regulation at all, and for a grass-fed label. There are certifiers, like American Grass-Fed Association, for example. But when you see just a grass-fed claim on meat in a grocery store, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've been raised according to what people might think is grass-fed. So, for example, a lot of people who are looking for grass-fed beef don't want to eat a genetically engineered crop. That's something that doesn't fit within their value system or whatever it might be. But a lot of the feed that are fed to grass-fed animals is alfalfa, which is a high-risk crop for genetically engineered contamination. So you're getting a lot of conventional alfalfa, meaning that it's been treated with pesticides or herbicides or whatever. Grass-fed also doesn't mean that the pastures that the animals are grazing on haven't been treated with chemicals or other pesticides or herbicides or whatever it might be that rancher deems necessary for managing his pastures. A lot of grass-fed producers will also finish their animals with sugar beet pulp, which is not technically grain, but is a byproduct of the conventional cropping industry, most of which is GE at this stage. So there's a lot to be considered when you look at claims made by beef companies, and really the best way to go is look for a third-party certifier.
And I take it that none of the grass that you're managing as part of Mindful Meats are eating any of what you just described.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Why wouldn't the Big Four just do that?
Well, honestly, I don't know. This is speculation on my part, but I really think that it's because they've worked so hard to streamline their operations. And the more certifications you bring on, the harder it is to ensure that across your supply chain if you haven't started with those from the start, right? So for like us, for example, we have our standards in place. We know what we're looking for. We can require that when we bring on a new supplier. But if you're like Cargill, for example, to go out and demand across your multiple suppliers and all of them, I mean, it's a complete mess. The least regulation, the better from their viewpoint. In addition, they would basically be cannibalizing their current market. I mean, they're saying that they'd be acknowledging that there's something out there that is superior to what they're producing, which is definitely counter to their interests.
Well, what does this mean for scalability for you?
Well, it definitely means that there's a cap for us at some point. But the good news is that there are more and more producers out there that are converting to these standards because they're seeing – it's twofold, really. They're seeing the demand on the consumer side for products that are raised in these ways, organic, non-GMO, animal welfare approved, et cetera. But also, it translates into better practices on their farms. When we've talked to producers that have switched from a conventional production practices to organic, the response is overwhelmingly consistent that the herd health has dramatically improved for them on farm as a result of becoming organic and getting, you know, antibiotics off the farm, putting the animals back on pasture, eating a more natural diet.
And you personally or your employees are not personally raising these cows,
right? That's correct.
You're working with producers.
That's correct.
So how much do you know about what's happening? How do you keep track of what's happening?
So we have our own auditing process, which means that before we ever bring a producer on board, we go out, we meet them, we get to know them. Usually it's a referral from a producer that we're already working with, so there's some trust aspect there as well. So we go out, we audit their production, we see their ranch, we get to know them as people, we talk to them, we have conversations, we go through our checklist, we let them know what we're looking for, what we expect. On a baseline, everything is certified organic, and when they begin working with us, we have to get their feed testing records for anything that's at high risk for genetically engineered contamination. If they're not already doing that, then we help them get into that program. So there are just some basics that we look for before we ever start buying from an animal. And then another assurance is that Mindful Meats employees actually go to each ranch every week. I myself do this, go to the ranch every week and pick out the cows personally. So what that means is that we are on ranch every week from our suppliers, buying from them, maintaining that relationship, seeing what's going on. We host tours, and we're very involved. We also have a traceability program, a full traceability program that we've built on the Salesforce.com platform that allows us to trace back any animal to our producer down to pictures of every cow. So we have these like levels of accountability that we've built into our system on our own, and on our own right, because we believe in that. And then that helps, you know, to make sure that there's no slippery slope as we grow to bringing on more producers, because ultimately we're getting a product to a customer that has certain expectations, and we have to maintain our integrity in that. And that's our entire purpose for being, really.
And so when one of your customers gets their packet of meat, you could actually hand them a photo of which cow it came from, is what you're saying?
I could hand them a photo of which group of cows.
Which group of cows? Yeah.
If it's ground beef, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. It's not like the 100 different kinds of beef.
No. We're not nearly that size. Yeah.
I saw an ad for beef at the dollar store. How do you even begin to compete with that?
Well, you know, we such a great question. We live in a country that has done this really amazing thing of producing abundance. You know, we have incredible abundance at a very cheap price. That is one thing that industrial agriculture and food production has done incredibly well with the United States. Of course, it comes at a pretty significant cost of external, you know, issues that we all have to deal with as a public. So we're working on solving that problem. So how do we compete with that is really twofold. You know, the ranchers that are producing that beef that's sold at the dollar store, they're not seeing very much for that at the end of the day. You may have been hearing about the hard times that are coming upon conventional dairying and the hard times that are coming upon conventional beef. Well, that's because the ranchers really aren't getting paid a fair price. So that's a system that's not working. And that's part of what Mindful Meats is working to improve by working with community, by helping to build community, by helping to bring in the story of Mindful Meats, by helping people understand where this beef is coming from, and by having added assurances that it's grown a certain way, we can command at a premium in the marketplace. So that answers the kind of greater food justice issue, in that we're getting our producers a fair wage for the work that they're doing and the meat that they're producing. And then we're also working on food justice on the other side of the coin by helping to subsidize the cost of beef into public schools, but also by helping to get beef into hospitals, which is an area that really needs clean meat. So I know that kind of went in a couple of tangents from your original question, how do you compete with dollar store beef? And I think it's a very complicated answer, because you're trying to address how do you get protein to people in an affordable way, but also how do you make sure the people who are producing it get paid a fair wage.
You mentioned earlier the non-GMO designation or certification. Can you explain what that means and how you came to that?
Definitely. So what being non-GMO verified means is that there is routine testing in any supplemental feed fed to an animal that is classified as non-GMO project verified, assuming that that feed is at high risk for genetically engineered crop contamination. So you're looking at major commodity crops like corn, soy, alfalfa, canola, cotton, etc. Alfalfa is a really big one in our industry. It's particularly in terms of days of drought. All productions are getting supplemented with feed. And so what that ensures for us, you know, right now the alfalfa that's being fed to our cows is certified organic, but maybe it's contaminated. We don't know, right? There is definitely a question within organics as to how much contamination is happening, if it's happening at all. Organics doesn't require routine testing. So this is an added assurance that, you know, lots of alfalfa that are delivered to our producers, we actually, within Mindful Meats, go and take samples of that alfalfa, test it, and give them a certificate of analysis to ensure that it's not been contaminated. So far, we have not seen any contamination within our system, which is excellent. But if we were, what that would mean is that the producer then has this data that they can take back to their alfalfa supplier and say, hey, this isn't what I'm buying, right? I'm not buying GE feed. I'm buying organic feed. You need to know that you have contamination, and I need to get the product that my customers are wanting and that I'm demanding. So that's what it means to us from a, you know, logistics and kind of tactical standpoint. What it means to us on a greater scale is that, you know, when you look at livestock, it's not just about the production of the animal. It is very, very much about, you know, how it's raised on land, but the longer chain of how that, what that animal eats when it's being supplemented. Roughly 80% of commodity crops that are grown in the United States are fed to livestock, most of which are genetically engineered at this point in time. And I'm not sitting here trying to debate the technology. I don't have an issue with the development of technology by any means whatsoever. But the way that it's being applied in our country today is really personally scary. You're looking at, in the major commodity crops, which are the corn, soy, canola, cotton, and alfalfa, like I mentioned earlier, there, roughly 50% of arable land is now genetically engineered in the United States. It's five crops that are taking up 50% of our ag land. That's monocropping. That is monocultures. Anytime you find a monoculture in nature, anyone will tell you that it's unhealthy. It's not going to survive, right? So think about it. If you have some major issue that comes in and swoops in and takes out one, two, three of those crops, you're devastating vast, vast acreage in this country that could be dedicated to growing food, that could be dedicated to healthy feed crops, whatever it might be. We are all about biodiversity. We're all about supporting ecosystems that have diverse crops on them, lots of different types of things that are being grown and cultivated. And that's really the issue. It's a food security issue more than anything else.
Well, on the GMO front, though, my understanding is that you actually helped create this certification.
I did.
So can you explain how that came to pass?
We were the first, as I mentioned, non-GMO Project Verified Beef Company in the United States, and we were working to get proudly that certification approved on our retail label for ground beef that we could sell into commerce. Well, let me backtrack a little bit. So the way that meat, poultry, and seafood is regulated in the United States is different from all other food products. If you're milk, if you're chips, if you're whatever, you're regulated by the FDA. You can put any marketing claim on that product, sell it into commerce. If the FDA has an issue with you, they'll come after you and send you a cease and desist. But for meat, poultry, and seafood, that's different. They have a preemptive approach to marketing claim approval, and it's regulated by the Food Safety Inspection Service of the USDA. That means that anything you want to put into commerce and sell that's labeled and has a marketing claim, you have to get approved by that agency. So we submitted our label. We were denied. And we were denied because, like most things in government, there's a rule book, and they follow this rule book. And if it doesn't fit within the rule book, they don't know what to do. And we were one of those. So they said, we don't know what to do. You're denied. Because they had no rule to handle no GMO or non-GMO or GMO-free meat claims. So essentially what we did, we went back to the Non-GMO Project. We said, are you guys having this issue? They said, we're starting to have this issue with the chicken company, Mary's Chicken, and with an egg company, Hidden Villa. And, you know, do you want to be part of the conversation? We said, absolutely. So we started going to D.C. and basically lobbying our government to help us get this done. I ended up hiring a lobbyist who represented Mindful Meats and the crew to get this done. It took about 9 months. We went back and forth with the agency many times, several visits, and essentially they went over the non-GMO project standards and processes with a fine-tooth comb to feel comfortable that anything that they were approving as a marketing claim was legitimate. And I think that's a really excellent process. It actually gave me a lot of faith, to be really honest, that the government is doing something right, which is ensuring that any company that's out there putting a product, at least in meat, poultry, and seafood, is doing so legitimately. And eventually we won and we were approved and we were able to take our product to market with that claim.
And so now other meat, poultry, and fish companies can apply for that.
Exactly.
As well.
And that was one of the big wins for us. Was it's not just about, you know, Mindful Meats being able to differentiate. It's about a bigger movement of more meat companies getting out there and differentiating themselves in the marketplace and standing for something.
You had a nice, clean job in tech.
Had a very clean job in tech.
Why did you decide to start a meat company?
You know, that's multifold. I think, honestly, I was really destined. I really do. I won't spend too much time on it, but when I was a kid, I was a total carnivore. I just ate so much meat. It was out of control. I just needed it. Yeah, I don't know why. I just loved it. My family's always been big foodies. But ultimately, you know, I study public policy. I've always been really interested in how we make decisions to govern our world. And when I was doing my studies in school, I was really convinced by a concept of social entrepreneurship, of how do we use business to make change for good versus being simply exclusively profit driven. So I decided that I wanted to work on and in a social enterprise. So I came to California after school to do that and ended up working in technology to get business experience so that I would know a little bit of what I was doing before I decided to start a business that wanted to do good things and wasn't just about profit. Because you definitely need to make profit in business. So, you know, when I was working in tech, I was doing some really interesting work in ad targeting, but it wasn't what I was. It was a hot industry, lots of money there. People were super interested. I was kind of on the forefront in a startup, and I saw that company through, but my heart wasn't in it. My passion wasn't there. I didn't feel like it was making a huge difference in the world. We were figuring out how to optimize ad targeting spin on the internet so that people could buy more things. And that's great and all, but I really wanted to dedicate my life to something that I felt was making a positive difference. So I started spending all of my free time studying global resource use, largely as a result of reading a lot of scary things online about climate change. And I was like, we're all gonna die. How do we survive? You know, how do we reverse this trend? And agriculture is a really big resource absorber. And it was certainly my area of passion being food. And I was thinking about starting a food business anyway. And I started out doing this stew company that was trying to compete with fast food, sourcing local ingredients. But I became really obsessed with meat sourcing. I tried to be vegetarian, but I couldn't for personal health reasons. And I started being really curious about how we can figure out how to get healthier, better sourced meat out to everybody. And I decided that that was my calling, was to go and found a brand that would help to source meat in a healthy way and get it out to more people.
What's the best advice about leadership you've ever gotten? You're now running an entire company. It's growing, it sounds, pretty rapidly. Yeah. Is there anything that you go back to and think about when you run into tough times?
Totally. I actually studied a lot of leadership when I was in school. One of my biggest areas of focus is moral leadership, and I was very fortunate to have amazing professors and a lot of eye-opening experiences in that regard. And, you know, the most overwhelming thing that I think people repeat a lot, but really is the most important piece, is to find the right team. You know, find people who are very passionate about what you're doing, who have shared values, who believe in your vision, who want to see it through, who are committed to that, but are also way better at doing other things than you are, right? Like, we're not good at everything. I'm definitely not good at everything. And so you need to find people who want to complement the work that you can do and that you can contribute, and then empower them. You know, give them the resources that they need, make them have fun, help them have fun, keep it energetic, and that sparks magic. I mean, I could have the same concept that sounds really great on paper, but have scrambled, you know, really to just get people so that I could give them things to do and then move on, and I would not nearly be seeing the success that I'm seeing right now, nor be as happy and have people as happy, by far.
Well, thank you, Claire Ermengard, for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Claire Ermengard, the founder of Mindful Meats. For more on this topic, be sure to listen to our conversation with Susan Griffin Black, the founder and co-CEO of EO Products. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. While you're there, listen to previous shows and sign up for our email updates. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/inflectionpointradio. Follow us, and follow me on Twitter at L.A. Schiller. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco, and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. Thanks for listening. I'm Lauren Schiller.